This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, bringing you the biggest stories from across Texas. The Headline gives you the news you need to be an informed citizen. Well, hello, everybody. Happy Friday, and thank you for joining us on this episode of The Headline. I'm Brandon Waltons, the managing editor of Texas Scorecard. We've got a big program today looking at the biggest stories from this week, okay? The gubernatorial race, the race for Texas governor, right, is in full swing. We're going to talk about some of the developments in that race with the campaign finance report, as well as Governor Greg Abbott's new taxpayer bill of rights. I'll be chatting with Tim Hardin over at Texans for Fiscal Responsibility with that in just a bit. But first, I want to talk about a big story we have up at TexasScorecard.com this week, where newly released audio from a town hall inside the Texas National Guard reveals that some of the top soldiers there don't think that Governor Abbott's challenge to the vaccine mandate will be successful. In fact, one military commander said in this recording obtained by Texas Scorecard that 8,000 soldiers are at risk from the vaccine mandate. Now, vaccine mandates have, of course, been a topic we've talked about for quite a while, be it in businesses, be it for healthcare workers, and yes, even Department of Defense employees, including soldiers in the National Guard. Now, the Texas Supreme Court last week struck down a mandate on large businesses, businesses of over 100 employees, saying that their employees don't need to have the vaccine. At the same time, though, they upheld a ruling that healthcare workers can absolutely be mandated to have the vaccine. Right now, we don't have a decision yet on whether or not employees of the Department of Defense or other military are going to be required to have the vaccine. Right now, there's a mandate in place. Governor Greg Abbott has said that the Texas National Guard is not subject to that. In fact, he's written a letter to Tracy Norris, the general in the Texas National Guard, Texas Military Department, rather, saying not to enforce it. At the same time, he's also filed a lawsuit against the Biden administration, with Ken Paxton filing that lawsuit for him. Even there, this general says that he's a lawyer in this recording and says that he does not think that that is going to be successful. In fact, the quote is, the federal government is saying that on the 30th of June, if you're not vaccinated, that you're not going to be paid. And they're doing that at the federal level. There's nothing that the state level that we are going to do or can do about it. Of course, there is one thing that could potentially be done, and yet it seems like an option that the governor so far has been hesitant to do, which is to call the legislature back, right, for a fourth special session on vaccine mandates. This is something that the Republican Party of Texas has been calling for, that a number of lawmakers in the House and the Senate have been calling for, and that conservative grassroots have been calling for as employees face termination for not getting the COVID jab. So far, the governor, who's the only person who can call a special session, has said he wants to defer to the courts. Well, what happens if the courts decide against him? Will then the legislature be called back? Perhaps the legislature should be called back even earlier. No doubt that this issue is going to play very big as the governor faces a tough primary election campaign. Okay, he's running for his third term in office. He's got a number of primary challengers. And you've got early voting just weeks away. Now, this week, we got some of our first real insight into how those campaigns are doing on the fundraising side of things. And Sydney Henry, our Capitol correspondent, who's joining me now. Sydney, we have these campaign finance reports out now, okay? They're looking at the last 6 months of 2021. And so this is really the first opportunity that people have to kind of dig into these campaigns and see exactly who's donating to who. And kind of more importantly, who has the money advantage in these races? And so as you look at the governor's race, the gubernatorial race, top of the ballot here, it comes as no surprise that Governor Greg Abbott, the incumbent, kind of comes ahead with his war chest.
Most definitely. He raised almost $19 million in the last 6 months, which brought his total to $65
million. $65 million. I mean, that's hard to imagine for a statewide candidate, even in Texas, to have. And certainly had a lot of individual donations as well.
He touted 159,000.
159,000 individual donations. So that's the incumbent Governor Greg Abbott. But at the same time, this election is unique because he does have those primary challenges. And those people, even though they might not be raising as much as the incumbent, which is to be expected, they're still showing some pretty respectable gains.
They are. Former State Senator Don Huffines, who is the businessman up from the Metroplex, he's raised almost $12 million as well.
$12 million. Amazing. You've got Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, former Texas GOP chairman, has raised $2
million. $2 million.
And then what about Chad Prather? Because that's somebody who I think people have not necessarily, fairly or unfairly, been taking his campaign as seriously as the others.
He also made six figures. He made almost $109,000.
$109,000. Absolutely amazing. I know that we'll be following exactly what, I mean, they're literally just several weeks until early voting starts on February 14th. And so we'll be following those races, but certainly a great update on the campaign finance side of things. But I do, while you're here, want to talk about this story, because this is something that has been sweeping around online that has been absolutely amazing to see, which is that Congressman Dan Crenshaw from the Houston area has been in a little bit of hot water for a video that's going around of him snapping at a young girl who attended a Montgomery County Tea Party meeting, who essentially asked him about some comments he had made. Before we look at the clip of that, give folks a little bit of context about how this all began.
Okay, so a couple of years ago, Cruz went on the Jocko podcast when he was proponing his new book, Fortitude, which now not so new. Mm-hmm. But he went on the podcast and he made some comments about Jesus Christ, comparing him essentially to Superman. And then separating him from real people, like Rosa Parks and Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, he said something to the effect, you know, there's people, there's Jesus Christ, and then there's real people like mm-hmm. Rosa Parks. It certainly got some people angry.
It did. It spiraled a bit on Twitter, and now it's come back again when this girl asked him this question, and his response is not so nice.
Yeah, let's take a look at that clip real quick.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Archetypes that we look up to. Jesus is a hero archetype. Superman is a hero archetype. Real characters too. I could name 1,000. Rosa Parks, Ronald Reagan, end quote. I can't wrap my head around this.
Well, I'll help you. Put a period out of the word Jesus and don't question my faith.
Wow.
Is
wow.
That?
Wow. To a 10-year-old girl. Way to go, guy.
Who's?
You moron.
What? What?
Yeah, you
don't talk to a kid like that. Don't question my faith. You guys can ask questions about all of these things, and I will answer them. But don't question my faith.
I can question your faith if this is what you said.
That's, I mean, you can read the quote again. But nowhere in that quote am I saying Jesus is not real. That's a ridiculous statement.
He's the Son of God.
Of course he's the Son of God. Of course he's the Son of God, and of course he's real.
You can't say two different things. You can say that on a podcast, and you can say this here.
On the podcast, nobody would have understood it that way. I think you're twisting it that way, which is not very Christian. Which is not very Christian.
Let's go, Brandon!
Let's go,
it's
Brandon!
It's not. And I'm not going to have my faith question.
Thank you.
I'm not going to have my faith question.
Wow, certainly not what you want to see if you're an incumbent congressman who's going and doing a town hall with his constituents. But even then, the reaction continued to come from people who had even supported him in the past.
Definitely. Michael Berry, who is a Houston talk radio host, mm-hmm. he came out strongly on Tuesday against Crenshaw and against what he had said about himself as well, because he had some personal beef with him.
Yeah, I mean, and he had personally endorsed him. A lot of people actually kind of attribute at least his endorsement in part mm-hmm. to carrying Crenshaw over the finish line in that open race that he won several years back. Mm-hmm. But you also had Kenny Webster, who tweeted, "I live in Dan City." Kenny Webster, of course, being a radio show host as well there in Houston, said, "I live in Dan City. Trust me when I tell you, we don't hear from Crenshaw unless it's election time. The only reason he's out campaigning right now is because he has a primary opponent. He cares more about D.C. than Texas and his constituents noticed." Absolutely not what you want to see if you're an incumbent.
Not at all.
Not at all. Well, thank you so much for filling us in on that.
Thank you.
Now, I mentioned the Taxpayer Bill of Rights. Okay, this is a big announcement that was made by Governor Greg Abbott this week. It was highly touted, essentially teased that there'd be this great new proposal to help struggling taxpayers in Texas. But the proposal wasn't quite what people thought it would be. I sat down earlier with Tim Hardin, the president of Texans for Fiscal Responsibility, to go through the proposal and discuss what it would actually mean for Texas taxpayers. Tim, we're looking at this new Taxpayer Bill of Rights introduced by Governor Greg Abbott this week. And, you know, there was a lot of hype kind of leading into this, people wondering what was going to be in this plan. And ultimately, when it came out, I think the real word to describe it was, as y'all used in your analysis, underwhelming.
Yeah, it certainly was. We actually had even higher expectations than the reality. The reality is we didn't even see any semblance of something called rights. And most of what he was proposing seems more like gimmicks than actual tax reform.
Yeah, and we'll go through. I mean, he put out this plan. It's pretty verbose. A lot of words, right? A lot of words in this plan. Going through it and looking through what he's laying out. And I'll have you kind of jump in and talk about some of this. You know, the first part talks about reducing school property tax rates. And interestingly, it kind of looks backwards to what the legislature has already done over the last several years in reducing these property tax rates, but rather, you know, they're only slowing the growth, right, of these property taxes. And the average Texan hasn't really seen property tax relief.
That's right. You know, and if you pay attention to the verbiage he uses, I believe the title says they reduce rates, but then he says he had used $18 billion or $15 billion to reduce property taxes. The reality is, in the last year or so, talking to hundreds, if not thousands, of taxpayers, I don't know one person whose property taxes have actually gone down. And that is what the grassroots have been screaming. As a matter of fact, we've been screaming for complete elimination of the property tax because it's an immoral tax and we pay rent to the government. Playing games with equations and compression rates is not what grassroots are asking for.
Further on in the proposal, he talks about empowering homeowners and property owners to reduce their taxes. The big one on this is you get a 3% discount if you pay your tax bill early. I don't know about you, Tev. I think a lot of property owners in Texas are struggling just to pay them at all versus paying them early at this point.
Yeah. First off, it's confusing language, and he didn't even really explain how that would go about. As you know, many people roll their taxes into their mortgage. How does that work? Are we talking about people on fixed incomes who have paid their house off and them paying it up front? A lot of them would struggle with that. And it also doesn't even take into consideration that, you know, inflation is at 7%. Real estate inflation in Texas is far, far higher than that. We have issues with appraisals being inflated. And so 3% is a big nothing burger. And yet again, it's just a gimmick to try and placate taxpayers.
Yeah, moving on through this, another point of the plan talks about giving new homeowners an automatic reduction in the taxable value of their property if the purchase price of their home is lower than the value that it's appraised at, I guess, in that first year when they buy the home. Doesn't really comport with what we're seeing in the housing market in most of the markets in Texas right now, though, does it?
You're right, especially in the last year. You know, we've had issues with appraisals, but lately the biggest issue has been folks moving over here from California and Oregon and selling their, you know, 1,000 square foot home for $1 million and inflating real estate prices. And so yet again, especially in this last year, as this real estate boom has happened, I don't know anybody whose appraisal value is actually under their actual value of their home. So I don't see who this is going to help. And yet again, this is not a major tax reform. This is just kind of throwing some peanuts to taxpayers.
Another point on this list here, providing real appraisal reform to make the system more transparent and taxpayer friendly. What does that mean?
I don't know what that means. I'm not against reforming the appraisal process. I think it's a huge burden we place on homeowners to ask them to come and argue for their home value. Most people hate it. We think the better solution would be abolishing the property tax completely, which of course would likely either abolish the appraisal process, or it would be something like we get appraised when we actually purchase the home, and then we have no need to argue after that. It just depends on what solution to the property tax problem we bring forth.
I want to go further down to the last point on this Bill of Rights, which talks about local government debt. Essentially, the proposal is that local governments would have to be required to get a 2/3 supermajority in order to pass bonds. I mean, this sounds like this could possibly be a good reform, no?
It sounds great, but if you look at the makeup of most of our local governments, they lean heavily left, and most of these bonds and debts are passed with overwhelming majority. So although it sounds great that we would require a two-thirds, my guess and what we see is that that would be no problem for most local governments, which means adding on more and more debt when we already are one of the highest local debt states in the nation would be pretty easy for these governments.
So this is Abbott's plan. This is the taxpayer bill of rights. What do you think this does right now in the gubernatorial race? I mean, the early voting just weeks away.
Sure. I don't know how many people have watched some of the interviews and panels with some of the other candidates, but every single one of the other three major, which would be what Huffines, Prather, and West, are advocates for eliminating property taxes altogether. They vary in the methods by which they want to do that. The biggest cry is education funding. Mm-hmm. Most of them actually take care of education while using things like the surplus with the spending limit that was just passed this last go round and using that to pay down compression rates until they're zero. I think Huffines has a plan that involves real estate taxes. Prather mentioned VAT taxes or consumption-based tax, which of course is in the Republican Party platform. And so I think their ear is a little closer to the ground than Abbott's. They're hearing the cries from the grassroots that we're fed up with paying rent to the government and that our property taxes, which are some of the highest in the nation, are just out of control and something needs to be done. We're tired of gimmicks. We're tired of just getting thrown peanuts. Something needs to be done.
Y'all have championed a plan kind of rolled out by the Texas Public Policy Foundation to eliminate property taxes in 10 years. Real quick, explain how in the world that works.
It's using the surplus. And so I believe it was Senator Hancock that passed a spending limit bill that would limit the entire state budget to population plus inflation. And I believe this was almost an $8 billion surplus. We'll probably get some more numbers from the controller here pretty soon. But this should, as long as Texas economy remains relatively stable, should produce perpetual surpluses really forever. And as Texas grows, the surplus should grow. And the plan relies on using that surplus and paying down compression rates. I believe it was Oliver Stern's bill in the House that had the language that we would pay them down until the school MNO is at 0%. And that's the goal. It's to get down to 0% and to completely eliminate property taxes altogether.
Oh, that would be really nice to see. Thank you so much for joining us, Tim.
Well, thank you all for joining us again for this episode of The Headline. I want to let folks know real quick before we go that Texas Scorecard is hiring. We've got a few positions open. You can go to texasscorecard.com/opportunities to learn more about that, learn more about the positions that are open, and perhaps if you'd be a good fit, and you can apply online there as well. So that's texasscorecard.com/opportunities. Again, thank you to everybody for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to The Headline. You can watch the premiere of The Headline on our website at 5:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. If you like today's production, please consider subscribing and leaving a review on whatever podcasting platform you listen on.